Shalom, Saints. Welcome back to another episode of The Upper Room, where we loose and bind biblical topics, we share testimonies, we get into all manners of areas with regarding our walk in the faith with Yeshua Messiah. If you're new around here, please subscribe. And if you even enjoy the conversation, feel free to get involved with the comments, like and share. As always, most appreciated. Now, today's conversation, I really feel like it's going to be a blessing to those that receive it. My last conversation with our sister Anna was awesome, and we mainly dealt with, I guess, the perspective of a walk of faith from a kind of solo perspective, what it means to step out in the world and step out in faith on your own. Today's focus, I think we're going to be looking more primarily at what it means to do that within a family environment. But before we do that, today's guest, this isn't his first rodeo. I have had the pleasure of meeting this brother at Sukkot this year. We took part in the conversation at, for the Sukkot special. And so, yeah. Shalom, Tom. Welcome.
Shalom, brother. Good to be here.
Great to have you back. This is a conversation which I think we've been looking forward to for the last few weeks. And it's something that I would say it has correlated with both of our hearts in terms of how we view, life and ministry. Mm-hmm. So today we're going to be focusing predominantly on what it means to raise a family and to walk out your faith, walk out what it means to live your life in spirit and truth with your nearest and dearest and your loved ones. So I think based on the conversations that we had at Sukkot and the ones that we had in the meantime as well, I think we have a lot in common, and you have a lot to share, which I think could potentially not only help myself but help a lot of younger members of the community who are looking to step out and live a biblically based life with their family. So with that being said, Tom, if you'd just like to give our viewers and our listeners a bit more of a background in terms of your faith and your walk and how you started out and how we've arrived here at Almond House together and everything else in between. So however you're led, brother.
Sounds good. I'll try and keep it the short version. So I grew up in a Christian, like non-denominational Christian Bible-believing family where at a young age, like 5 or 6 years old, I finally clicked and I understood what Jesus Christ did for me on the cross. He bore my sin, and it was through him that I had access to the Father. And so it was, you know, that was the infancy of it. And then just through life, you know, multiple different churches, a couple different denominations, and but mainly just that generic Bible-believing Christian upbringing and theology, and was exposed to Torah observant kind of things, I'd say as a young 20s or so, and just in little bits and pieces I would see it. I thought it was interesting, but it wasn't until a year and a half ago that y'all really kind of started teaching us a lot and helping us see a lot. So that's been, and that was just through him kind of humbling us and opening us up to realize that a lot of things we had grown up with and been taught weren't the case or were mixed. And so we just were forced to look at it really carefully and to read scripture really with fresh eyes for understanding and not just trying to read into it what I've been taught this says, but actually what does it say. And from 12 years, I remember being 12 years old and reading the book, I forget what it's called now, but it's the story of Nate Saint. I don't know if you know the story of it. There was 5 missionaries down in Ecuador who were martyred back in 1956. Right. They were basically trying to reach this tribe of what they then called the Alca Indians, who were just basically a savage tribe who was, you know, without God, without the gospel. They were trying to reach them with the gospel, but everyone that came into contact with them ended up dead. And so these five men, especially, they were younger men, banded together secretly because they're like organizations that had them there would not have allowed them to do this. They basically banded together and went on their own mission to reach these people and make an actual contact, peaceful contact, for the sake of sharing the gospel with these people. It ended in those five men being killed, speared to death on the shores of the river. And I just remember one being impacted by that story and how these men were sold out for God and totally devoted their lives to whatever it takes, even death. I'm gonna spread the gospel. Mm-hmm. And one of those men was a bush pilot who like landed them on the sandbar so they could have access to that remote location in the jungles of Ecuador. And I remember it clicked in my head of mixing my love for God and my love for airplanes. And my like lifelong, since as long as I can remember back, I just loved the thought of flying, loved aviation and anything to do with airplanes. And so to me, it was like no brainer. That's what I'm going to do with my life. I'm going to be a missionary pilot mechanic. And so from 12 to young 20s, mid 20s, that's what I pursued. And even in at the cost of other things, like I had friends, but it was kind of casual. It was like, I am studying,
right?
And I am pursuing myself. I am pursuing getting licensed and getting experience and like reading these bush pilot books and just like poured myself into becoming that.
I really love how some folks get that from a young age.
Yeah.
Like I didn't personally experience that kind of understanding or desire or drive to be a, you know, certain vocation or passion as such. I always had interest, but
yeah.
I was always curious about folks that, you know, from early doors were like driven towards something like that. So I've always had a great respect and an admiration for those individuals that seem to have that early knowing. And I guess there's something we'll probably get into as we get into the conversation, but to facilitate that for younger folks, I think is like really crucial. But it's cool to hear how like yours was instigated through like, you know, a biblical framework. That's really cool.
And it like, it's interesting because the next chapter like totally goes away from all that stuff that I was pursuing. And so it's just interesting how Yah brings us along, where some of us have that drive and that thing of like, this is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And some don't, but in the end, it's all about just obeying God and what he tells you to do.
Because you generally find yourself where he's going to put you at some point. I mean, that's a whole, like, the providential movements of Yah is like a whole different thing. But yeah, like completely, like even in the...
Because obviously I'm not doing that right now.
Like, right.
That's not what the life I'm living at all.
Right.
Yes, I'm licensed as a pilot and a mechanic, and I could do that, but I'm not doing it now.
Right.
And yet I'm still... Like you said, the providence, the sovereignty of God, just leading us to the path where, okay, this is where I want you.
Were those elements transferable? Like
a lot of them weren't, and that was actually a big struggle I went through. Because so basically, what the kind of the story arc was, I was literally just at the point of I'd finished training. I had checked all the boxes for the like the minimum, you know, experience levels and licensing requirements and all that to be a bush pilot for missions, and was this close to signing up to an organization, getting their specialized training, and then going out in the field and doing it. But right during that time frame, I was working in a school that trains half of the missionary pilot mechanics out there, and I was seeing people coming back from the field either on furlough or to do other things. And I was seeing a lot of families that were like on the edge.
Right.
Marriages were a little bit rough and strained. Their kids were wandering. And I just remember seeing a disconnect of like, wait a second, we're missionaries. We're here for the kingdom of God and spreading the good news and yet our families are falling apart. What is this, and why? So I started facing this dilemma of, well, I've already invested so much in this. I could just carry on because it feels like it would be a waste for God to, you know, how could God lead me down this path so far of thousands, you know, spent on training, hours and hours and hours and hours and hours studying, a life's work kind of in the making. It was difficult rectifying, you know, how is it God to lead me to that point and then say, oh, and here's a big problem with that vision, with that career path. And so it felt like I would waste a lot. But then as I ended up turning the direction I did, it was neat just seeing how, again, the sovereignty of God, he helped me learn a lot of lessons that I wouldn't have wanted to otherwise learn had they not been connected to airplanes.
Right.
And aviation and learning those mechanical, you know, skills. I learned a lot of character development, a lot of work ethic, a lot of knowledge that still was transferable and I used in other parts of life. And so it was interesting to see how God still, you know, he used that to get me to a certain point and then redirect, but nothing is wasted in his kingdom. You know, he knew how that was all going to go.
I think we've already tiptoed into the area of the heart of this conversation, which I think we'd be in agreement where, for me, this is something I've spoken on at length in various podcasts to the point I can't even keep track. And I guess there's an element of personal revelation, and then there's, I believe, like a corporate application in the sense that, you know, Timothy talks about the description of the credentials of what it is to lead a church, i.e. to be the ruler of your house, you know, head of your home, for your children to respect you, to be sober-minded, one wife, you know, we know the description. Mm-hmm. And it became apparent for me personally that there could well be a big hole within the body, and I'm condensing this as much as I can for the sake of time, that there can be roles within the family, roles within marriage that may not be fulfilled in the biblical criteria for the sake of ministry.
Yeah.
And I think you, as I mentioned there, you've tiptoed towards this element of like, right, I'm going to go out and, you know, preach the gospel and work for the kingdom and all these good things. But I think we're seeing, again, just my opinion, in the context of what's taking place in the world today, and the attack on the family, as it were, the importance of what it means to retain these credentials before an outward expression. Yeah. So I guess, you know, we'll get into this area of our heart for what it means to, you know, pursue a godly living environment, primarily before an outward expression in a ministerial sense. And I know that's like quite a specific description, but this, you know, it does, it is a broad stroke as well. So my initial question, which I find quite interesting, is you mentioned there about being with your family in the sense that making decisions and going through the scriptures in terms of coming towards a more Torah-based mm-hmm. understanding. How was that for you in the context of your overall walk, where, say, for example, you're younger, right, I'm going to be a missionary, I'm going to fly planes, I'm going to get into the danger zone, I'll be on front line, to then having to facilitate your understanding of Yah's word and the applications of it, but within a family context, because it's, right, there's the responsibility, you've got other people involved, you've got your wife's opinion. If you could maybe, like, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it was rough.
Right.
It was scary too. Cause when Yah really, was moving on our hearts of the importance of Torah and the importance of, you know, not just following the New Testament, but also paying attention to the first two thirds of the book. And it was really humbling and a big part of it. So how we came into that time was a year previous. So we're talking like three-ish years ago. we came to the all knowledge and understanding of biblical cosmology. And that was first. That was like, you know, there's a lot in that.
Right.
And there's a lot of undoing. And to me, especially, and this is where it was funny, because I had been trained as a pilot, like, by the government.
Right.
They taught me. I read the FAA books, Federal Aviation Administration books, on this is how you become a pilot. This is how the weather works. This is how the Earth system works. This is how magnetism works. Like, all these things.
Right.
And navigation, radio navigation, all this kind of stuff. And so I remember coming across a video where it was just hitting every single one of those points. And each point they would bring up, I was just, like, struck. I was really frustrated. And, like, I try to watch my language in normal life.
Yeah.
But that was one of the first times my wife heard me, like, saying things I don't often say, because I was so upset that I'd been lied to.
Right.
Honestly.
Yeah.
And it was just like, are you kidding me? All these things that I thought I was an expert at, I'm actually not, because I actually don't know how it works.
Which is really curious, because I think part of the charm of this subject is how certain models can fit different interpretations. And I find that amazing, how you can have a career and an understanding of something without, not even, I find that fascinating.
Yeah. So it was just, that was mind blowing. And so that's a whole, other discussion that would be a blast. But that basically humbled us enough, and humbled me specifically, to go, okay, yes, I've received a lot of training and I have a lot of experience in the world and in just how physical things work. I'm really a hands-on kind of guy, mechanical kind of guy. And yet, just realizing that I don't have it all figured out, and I have to take a step back and observe for a minute and go, okay, so what is actually true? And I can back it up with like experience and observation, and not just taking someone's word for it. And so that set us up well for the next year, him doing that same thing for Sarah and I, and showing that the Bible, that both of us had like been trained in Bible school to be missionaries. Like, we knew it well. We knew the gospel story. We knew the progression through how Christ was presented in the Old Testament but fulfilled in the New, and how so many types and shadows, you know, played out through the course of biblical history. But in the middle of that, we also had, you know, a wrong framework for how it all played out. And it was basically a misinterpretation that had just been handed down and taught to generation after generation. And we were one of those generations that was handed this interpretation. And so we had to look at it with humility of, okay, regardless of what we've been told, what does the book actually say? And what do we find rings true with the Holy Spirit within us? Because we had been leaning heavy into exploring the Holy Spirit and specifically going to churches that leaned that direction. So, because that was missing from our upbringing,
right,
on both sides. So anyway, getting back to, you know, what was it like to go the Torah direction? It was, I'm thankful that y'all kind of warmed us up to it with the whole biblical cosmology thing, because we were faced with, okay, we have children that were, at the time, 8 down to 6-ish, roughly. And so we had that burden of responsibility of, like, we need to know what to tell them about how the world works. Now we need to tell them, you know, to have enough understanding to tell them with confidence and conviction, this is how the Bible works. This is what's in this book. Because it's a big book for a 6-year-old to digest. And so to be able to boil it down in an accurate enough way, but simplified, so that as they grow, they don't have the moments that we were having now going, right, wait, that's not how you said it was when, right, you first told it to me. The summary should match the actual thing, but just in short form and in simplified, you know, language. And so, yeah, it was hard being faced with that. And so we kind of practically how we went about it was Sarah and I studied really deeply for months, and y'all opened up time for us to do that. Ironically, it was through like the loss of income and kind of turning off a bunch of parts of life.
It would be too much fun if it wasn't done in the face of adversity.
Right, right.
Yeah, it wouldn't be your signature on that one.
Right, normally, right.
But yeah.
But a lot of that was like those things were getting our attention of like, okay, something's going on here because this is not normal. So God, are you trying to say something? Mm. Sure enough, he was. And so we studied a lot, and then, you know, as we would come to enough understanding about something, then we would know, okay, we feel like we have enough of an understanding of this part of it. Now we're going to introduce the children to that and try to bring them along. But, and this was actually a healthy way to do it too. We brought it along, not as we know everything, you know, listen to our wisdom now.
Right.
It was, okay, we used to be your age and we were taught this. Now we've learned that things aren't quite that way and they're different.
Mm.
So here's what we learned, what we were taught, and here's what we're now learning. And so it'd be really interesting to be in the minds of my kids and to know what it's like to be presented that as a 7-year-old, like to see both things, kind of the before and after.
I think that's really key. And I'm speaking from a not from a point of experience with this one, but first of all, I just want to say, like, with regards to when having like a paradigm shift in your life, again, I can only point to my own experience where, you know, whether it is the makeup of cosmology, whether it was the corruption within government systems, and all of these things, as a young guy with no obligations or responsibilities, that was a something to experience within itself, which yeah. felt like a big deal. So it's really fascinating to hear your experience and how you dealt with that from a completely different perspective. Because, you know, sometimes if you do want to, you know, jump down the rabbit hole or, get into these subjects, which can be really like mentally challenging, it's all well and good when you're on your own, but when you've got other people to consider, I think that's really quite something. Also, one thing that I find that I have a lot of respect for in terms of changing your biblical perspective. Now, again, from my point of view, when I came to the faith, it was very easy in the sense that I had nothing to unlearn in terms of covenant theology, you know, Paul's interpretations, you know, I was very much right. This is the Torah. This is the commandments. This is the Sabbath. Like it,
wow.
It, you know, praise Yah. It was, so I didn't have to go through that, that transition, so to speak. So from what I'm gathering, like you've gone through like quite a strong experience when having to deal with all of that. So, yeah, respect for that. I think one of the key principles, which I really admire, my view on potential parenting skills in the future, right?
Yeah.
I see an element of presenting, this is what mum and dad hold to. Mm-hmm. This is what the word of God says. And this is what this camp over here hold on to, whether it be secular, whether it be different parts of the faith. And for the truth of the matter to come through for the children, which I think is like easier said than done.
Yeah.
Like, is that something that you just found yourself you had to do because of the situation you had with regards to your theology and the way that you'd seen things? Because my fear is if you kind of, how can I say, if you tell a child one thing and you put the blinkers on, when that's removed, it can be very detrimental to them as they grow older, right?
Yeah.
So it's about almost like damage control of like, okay, so this is the thing and we want to, kind of introduce this in a way that's not detrimental, if that makes sense. Is that something you were conscious of?
I believe so. I think kind of what you're asking is how we introduced the fact that we used to believe this and now we believe differently. And so like, how are they going to handle that? And are they going to take you seriously?
And not undermine.
Not undermine the foundational. Yeah, that was very much on our minds and concerning, because I've seen it both goes. I've seen it go both ways.
Right.
Where, even loved ones were, you know, they grew up one way and then they were like ran smack into how that way didn't actually pan out or wasn't in accordance with truth. And it was devastating. Mm. They full on threw the baby out with the bathwater, and it was just like, none of this is real then in right. that case.
So that's traumatic, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And it's, there's a real, there's a real danger there of basically being hurt by the ones that you, as the person growing up or the person learning something, there's a danger of you being wounded so much by being told something that wasn't true, that you turn away from all of that and reject all of it. And the world is full of people like that. We have family and relatives and friends that have totally turned away from God and anything that has to do with him because they were hurt by God's people or by teachings that put on themselves the name of God and turned out to be hypocritical or be abusive. My wife grew up in a missionary family that turns out there was abuse and pedophilia and all kinds of stuff in the family and in like the very mission that her family was a part of. Like, it was devastating. And yet she still held on to God himself. Right, and she knew that, okay, this is a part of, and it's the age old question. How would a loving God let such evil happen?
Same place, yeah.
And it just comes down to the fact that he gave us free will in order to not make us into robots, but to have the ability to choose him or not, to choose to be on his side or not. There has to be that other side. There has to be, you know, the ability for someone to choose to go away from and against the way he made things. There's justice in the end, but often we won't see that justice until the end, and we have to trust him for that part. And so praise Yah, in the case of my wife, she had a solid enough relationship with God himself that she knew, okay, God didn't do this to me. Mm-hmm. It's something he allowed, but there was a reason for it. Mm. And now it's amazing the number of conversations we have that the fact that she has lived through that and healing from it, like connects us with people who are in it and dealing with it right now. I think it was Steve Saint, the son of that missionary pilot who died in Ecuador, who said in one of his writings or things that I was recorded of him, that people who have a wound, a raw open wound, but see that we have a scar in that same place, it gives them hope because they see that we have gone through the same thing but survived. We have healed from it. And so for them, they have that hope of, okay, if you can do it, then I can do it too. And so, you know, that's, God brings us through a lot of things so that we can, it's in Hebrews.
Right.
The comfort that he has comforted us, I forget the phrasing of it, but God allows us the opportunity to comfort others in a like way.
There's nothing that really goes to waste. And I think, again, that's one of the, I guess, one of the deeper meditations of one of the facets of the faith is, you know, why the bad things happen to good people, etc. But again, through shared experience and, you know, this perception as believers that we're, you know, sheltered or exonerated from the evils of this world, it's like, no, we're not. It all comes part of the testimony and his sovereign will.
Yeah.
So with that being said, now, when we first met at Sukkot, I remember we had is literally our first conversation, and I could already tell that you had a very interesting story in terms of, you know, we're talking about families and the challenges of raising families in a biblical construct, which I think is like so important. But yours has turned into a rather different story of over the last few years. Yeah. So I wouldn't mind if you wouldn't mind if we could touch into that a little bit. I know you mentioned before about having written your book about your experiences and things of that nature. So, yeah, if you could maybe get into like I'm, you know, for me personally, again, because it's relevant to my situation, the idea of raising a family within a typical construct in a biblical sense is a challenge and a test of faith and sanctification and all of that. But I think yours is a story which I think can provide a lot of inspiration and bring a lot of comfort to those who are stepping out in terms of, you know, raising families and being in situations that you're not comfortable yeah. with as a family. So, yeah, if you wouldn't mind touching on that, that would be great.
So more of the story of like what we're doing now or how it came along?
Yeah, both. Okay. Both. Why not?
So I guess I feel like there needs to be fill in of from, because I think very linear, in a linear fashion.
Right, yeah.
basically, I'll fill in from when I kind of came to that point of I was going to be a missionary pilot.
Perfect.
And then realized, wait, how do I do that in the context of raising a family? Basically, it came down to that career path was very, very, very demanding. Mm-hmm. And I realized I knew that in the future I would get to a point where I was faced with the hard decision of, do I keep doing this thing that demands my everything? Do I keep on that? I knew I'd be faced with a situation where someone is dying out in the jungle of malaria. They need a medevac flight immediately. But I, as the sole person or one of the few people here, you know, qualified to fix this plane and fly it, I'm halfway through an engine teardown and I need to put it back together in a way that doesn't kill somebody later. I need to not make mistakes and I need to get this thing done ASAP and get out and save that person. But yet my family hasn't seen me for 3 months because this situation never stops happening. Mm. And so I just realized like the time to make that decision wasn't when I was faced with it, but it was when I realized that that decision was going to happen. And at the time I was processing this, I didn't know my Sarah, my wife, I didn't know her yet. I didn't have a family yet, but I knew it was in the future. Mm-hmm. And so at that time I just kind of, okay, God, what else do you want me to do? I'm kind of invested in this path, but now what? And so, and it was like, it was 10 years of just like trying this, trying that, exploring this, exploring that, sort of always down that path kind of being available for missionary work and kind of things that would lend themselves that direction. But be something scaled back kind of responsibility wise so that what I'm doing, the work that I'm doing isn't like life critical for other people. So that when my family rolls into the picture, number one, it's not a life or death thing if I can give my job 80 hours of the week. But also I wanted to be able to do work that I could welcome my children into. And I could, you know, it's not exactly a great idea to have an 8-year-old climbing around the airplane that you're working on, playing with tools and dropping screwdrivers down inspection holes. Because that happens, you know,
right.
Mistakes happen and they kill people. And so I was just realizing like, I've got to do work that pays the bills and is doing important work for God's kingdom.
And it's slightly less Indiana Jones than necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. It basically just realized that I realized how the Western culture didn't prepare me for real life. Western culture brings us up exalting education and exalting career.
Right.
It doesn't exalt family. And it doesn't prepare us for family. And the prior, it's literally a priority flip-flop happens once we become married, but then also once we become parents. Literally, people have entered our lives. Eternal souls have now entered our life context that I am the only person in the world that God gave to be a father to my children and a husband to my wife.
Wow.
No other person on the face of the earth can fill that role the way I am supposed to. Mm. And so I realized, anybody else in the world could go be a pilot and a mechanic and, and a missionary and a pastor and an author or whatever. Anybody else in the world can do those things, but nobody else in the world can do the job of parent to my kids and husband to my wife.
Wow.
And so I realized once that happens, once I'm a husband and once I'm a father, all that other stuff needs to take a back seat. Priority wise, level wise, and so I just, that flip-flopped everything. And I started trying to figure out how to work in that context. And that really feeds into what we're doing now. I mean, basically, like career wise, I've dabbled in alternative energy and in product design and 3D graphics, 3D design on the computer and making that into real life models and products, customer service, writing and video work, and carpentry. Carpentry has sprinkled in between everything else because it was my fallback that it was skills that I had that I could do. I didn't thoroughly enjoy doing it all the time. And I'm not fast at, working on things. I'm very meticulous and slower. And so it's hard to balance for me that production versus quality.
Yeah. Which you'll find that in most industries, right? Isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I think you make a really good point there. That irrespective of, your vocation or your career, I think particularly from a man's perspective, this idea of the commodity of time, right? So, we can often feel the, not so much the burden, but the responsibility of provision and doing the things that you're called to do as a provider and as a man, but obviously not compromising on the quality that is the time with your family. So the whole week, like you said, in that Western mindset, we can get carried away by the things that have been set up and institutionalized, which, can be good and bad. But essentially, is that taking time away from our family? So, you could have X amount of dollars in the bank, you can have the career, but what is... what is the time spent in terms of the investment with my family? And I think that's massive, irrespective of your position, your calling, ministry, anything. Is like, so what is the actual point of all of this? The point is like you said, to raise your children in the way, really. So I think that's important for anyone to consider, when going into this realm of family and rearing children.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I mean, I grew up, I think when I was 12, we moved to a place out in the country that was right next to a family who had been there multiple generations. And it was a couple in their, 70s to 80s. They had 10 children. Each of those children, most of them were married and had kids of their own. Like by the time, as we knew them, they had grandkids and great grandkids and great great grandkids coming to the farm for family reunions.
Love
I
that.
Remember seeing that and just seeing they were believers, and I just remember seeing the legacy that was there, and the husband, the sort of patriarch, of that family, I believe his job was typesetting for a newspaper. Like it wasn't a big glamorous job, but he specifically kept that job specifically and didn't climb the ladder so that he would have the freedom to punch the clock at the end of the day, go home and be with his family. And so he chose to invest time in them. Like you were saying, he realized that I have so much time with these kids before they're grown and gone. I need to pour into them while I have them around. And then there will be a season for other things. I mean, for him, it became a season of just like abundant family activities.
Yeah.
and working on the farm and stuff. But that, it's just that whole thing.
That's honestly, I think that's such a really hard area to get right. This element of trying to maybe set up something solid in terms of a legacy for your children, a stable financial environment, security, provision, but without that compromise. And, you know, right. I think we spoke before we come on about the period of time to pour into our children at the youngest age.
Yeah.
Again, from a Western perspective, it seems we have it like backwards in the sense that we increase our discipline and training as the child grows older, which is, it doesn't make sense, you know. When they're 16, I'll ground them. And
It's too late. Yep.
So, yeah, maybe if you shed some light in terms of your perspective of this critical time, early doors of like, right, so I've been blessed with my wife, we've been blessed with our family, and how do I utilize this time to actually really do the things that we're called to do with our children
in this
context, like it's hard.
Yeah.
But what's that been like for you?
Yeah. Like you said, it's a struggle, and that's, I still don't get it right.
Right.
You know, I'm still working on it and figuring it out, and I'm still finding myself out of balance often.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I need to scale back. Because I have my dreams and I have my passions and my projects and my, you know, even ministry opportunities or business opportunities of things that like, man, I could really see this taking off and flying. But I have to scale myself back and go, okay, is that right for this season that we are in? Because we're in a season of training our children up the way they should go. And so it's interesting because I've found that now I'm kind of in an in-between season personally where I'm starting to see some things be able to take traction as far as like projects and ministry opportunities or business opportunities. I'm starting to see them be able to start blossoming, but in the same context of having children that are old enough to actually contribute to that.
Right.
Instead of distract from it. And so,
this is just a really cool like area, but I think there could potentially be an element of leaning not on your own understanding in the sense that, like you said, the timing.
Yeah.
So say, for example, like this idea of whether it be projects or business opportunities or things that you would want to do, but the nature of sacrifice, for example, where you put these things to the side in order to contribute for this, you know, sanctity of the home and what we're talking about. But yet somehow in Yah's time, and it this is something that is going to yield so much more and in such a better way if you do it in his timing, if you prioritize the kingdom first and the kingdom, what it says about the family. So I think there's a real subtle thing taking place there.
It's a dance and a balance of pursuing the things that Yah puts on your heart, but like we said, in context, in season, and in obedience to him. It was actually neat how it's so much of my story kind of refers back to the early years of pursuing aviation stuff. It was actually really neat because the missionary pilot who died in that group of five, his son, I think, was 8 years old when his dad was speared to death in the jungle. That kid grew up to lead a mission, an organization down in Florida in the U.S. called ITAC. And they basically teach indigenous people, natives, how to do really technical things very simply.
That's cool.
And without the language barrier difficulties. And so they teach, you know, natives how to do dental work, like oral surgery, and they give them a backpack dental chair with power tools developed for this purpose. So they can go out in the jungle literally and pull people's teeth that need it and then tell the gospel to them. And so it's just a really cool model.
I absolutely love
what they do. But I wrote to Steve Saint at one point, and it was sort of one of those early, it was, actually, it was in that time frame of me going, okay, maybe I'm not supposed to pursue this aviation thing as much as I was, but maybe I am. And so I was just like figuring that out. And I wrote a letter to Steve, and just sort of halfway throughout, like I was done with training. I was in that time frame of like, I could kind of go anywhere I want right now. Single, I'm carefree-ish. And I was sort of halfway throwing out, like, I could come volunteer for you maybe. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of said in a similar like frame. It wasn't like, I can commit to this. It was like, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of throwing it out there. And he wrote what he wrote back. He sent me a copy of his book, and then he wrote a note in the front of it and just said, just be obedient. And it was really simple, but it was really hit me. And it literally like has helped me for years. Just scale back to, Yah, what do you want me to do right now? And then do it. And that has helped me in so many of the critical points of like, all these things are mounting, and I have the responsibilities of providing for my household. I have the responsibilities of knowing theologically what to teach them, and direction wise, ministry and business opportunity. Just the ability to just stop and ask God, like, which direction do you give me peace with? What do you want me doing? And then get his clarity and then go that direction in faith.
With that, again, I think I have a keen interest in what it is to hear, God's will in your life. And I think that's probably prevalent for most, if not all, believers. Yeah. Practically, I mean, we don't have to go into the depths of it, but practically, what does that look like for you in terms of, like you said, in terms of navigating God's will in your life? What does that look like? Is it a, is it the voice of Yah telling you, you must do this now, son? Or is it like it's a sense of wisdom and application of biblical principles? How has that like looked for you? Because I know that mm-hmm. can sound vague, and I'm not saying just you specifically, but generally we all say, yeah, and then the Lord was showing me this and I... How did that look for you in that time?
It's taken different shapes throughout
life.
And a lot of it has just been him giving us wisdom just from life experience. And but a lot of it, like, honestly, my wife and I many times a week will literally just ask God, our Heavenly Father, who cares for us and wants to help us. We just literally point blank ask him something and we expect a reply.
Mm.
And he gives it to us. Like, usually sometimes it's fuzzy. Sometimes it's unclear. It's really helpful that there's two of us. And right. So we can literally will point blank ask a question. And if we get a different, if we both get a different answer, then we know that either it's not time, like we're asking too much, we're pushing too hard, we're trying to get too specific too early, or we're too tired and we need some sleep. We'll ask tomorrow. but we basically, so the fact that there's two of us, we can bounce it off each other and compare. And then when we both get the same thing, then we usually go with it and it turns out pretty good. It practically, like, that started as like the miniature version of that when I was just starting to learn to listen for his voice. Was literally when the dilemma of when you're driving down the freeway. Do you call them freeways here?
Motorway.
Yeah. Driving down the motorway, you see somebody, somebody's car off to the side of the road, their blinkers are on, or their hood, their boot.
Yeah,
boot is open.
The hood is open, yeah.
And it's open. So obviously they're in distress or they're, something's not going well about their day. Do I stop and help them or not? Sometimes I've stopped and it has turned out to be a waste of time. or they already had help coming or whatever.
Yeah.
But sometimes I have stopped and it was an appointment of God.
Right.
Like, we were meant to meet each other and have a conversation.
Yeah.
Or I was meant to help them or whatever. And so it's that, but it's that question of sometimes I'm on my way and I'm going to be late if I stop. Or potentially the safety of my family could be at jeopardy if I stop and it's not a safe place or person, to stop. And so I literally just started asking the question, you know, split second timing of like, I'm speeding down the road at up to 80 miles an hour and I need to make a decision in a couple seconds or else I'm going to have to go way down to an exit, turn around, and come back. Father, are you meeting their needs right now? Or do you have it for me to stop and help them? Yes or no? And then I would just get a feeling of, you know, it's not like him, thus saith the Lord. No. Yeah, yes.
You feel the press.
But it's just feeling his guidance of, yeah, stop. They need your help. Or nope, they're fine. I'm taking care of them. And it was that just repetition of doing that many, many, many times. And then like, if he'll give me an answer on that question, what if I asked him another question? Wow. And then just practicing that, like over, I mean, we've been married now coming on to 12 years and we've been doing it most of those years. I think the two of us just asking him things and we have to be careful because, you know, we want to know everything. That's part of the whole thing of the fall is Eve wanted secret knowledge. She wanted to be able to know, you know, to be like God and know
all evil the, and all of the, that. The curse of the two-year-old who's why?
Yes,
why?
Exactly. And so you have to balance it with faith and trusting and just trust and obey.
Right.
And so it's balanced with that and it's end with the respect of, okay, yeah, you told me to do this thing. I'm struggling with how. Or I'm struggling with when, or I'm struggling with, I'm trying to do this thing and a ton of opposition is hitting us right now. We keep getting attacked. We keep getting sick. The finances are not there for this thing that we really feel like we're supposed to be doing. Like, what are we supposed to do? Mm. Are we? And so the respect for fearing him as we should and respectfully approaching him and saying, can you please guide us more specifically on this thing or provide in this direction, but balanced with, okay, 3 months ago, he told us to do something and we still haven't done it.
Right.
Do you think he's going to give us more wisdom and especially more specific, like detailed wisdom about something, direction about something, if we didn't obey him on that thing he told us to do 3 months ago? Yeah. Oftentimes he's waiting for us to just get off our butt and do something that he'd already told us to do.
Which I guess, given the context of what we're talking about and in your life, you know, we're focusing on this this notion of pouring into our children at an early age and to raise our children faithfully. Mm-hmm. How has that played out for you guys? You know, as I mentioned previously, you know, share as little or as much as you want with regards to your testimony and where the Lord's led you over the last few years in particular. How have you found that integrating? Because I would imagine that's pretty crucial in terms of where you guys have found yourself of late. Yeah. Again, it's not like you're Bonnie and Clyde riding off into the sunset doing as you wish. Like you're doing some serious stuff with your children to consider. So with all that being said, how does that look for you? Just to build a picture for anyone that would be wondering about the challenges of raising a family.
Yeah. So that people know the context of where we're at right now. Basically, my wife and I and three kids, we were living up until late March, actually, of 2024, last year, right? Yes, 2024 March. Up until that point, we were living as homesteaders in the United States of America, starting in Washington, then Idaho State, then down to Missouri, and just full-on pursuing sustainability, basically, and learning it / teaching it at the same time, homesteading, raising animals, gardening, permaculture, regenerative, you know, ways of grazing your animals and stuff like that. So that's what we were doing. That's what we were focusing on. And then we also own a seed company where we sell heirloom garden seeds within the U.S., specifically for northern short season climates. And And so that was the context we were in then. That's when we, you know, in the middle of that time in Missouri is when we came onto biblical cosmology and Torah observance stuff. And that was the time frame where it was, we went to a conference in Idaho where we were selling our garden seeds, and I was showing, presenting a log splitter that I developed and was publishing plans for. We came back, like, literally in the middle of that was when Yah was like knocking on our doors with the Torah stuff. And my wife actually paused exploring that in order for us to do that conference and come back so that she wouldn't, because she felt herself starting to get convicted with certain things and start to realize like, oh man, I think I need to change some life things. And, but she didn't want to do it in a way that was dividing us. Mm-hmm. So she gracefully just said, no, I'm not researching that anymore. I'm going to wait till we go to the conference and back so that Tom and I can do it together. So I'm so thankful she did that. Cause then that's like that time frame is when we really dove deep into that. At that same time, that's when God kind of dried up our income for 6 months. And that was a really time of, I mean, that was a time of an example of a time when we were asking him like, what's going on? And he wasn't giving us a direct answer until we fasted and prayed. It was actually a year ago, as of a few days ago, the 24th of December, 2023, we fasted and prayed. And I just spent time wandering around our 10 acres that we had in Missouri. And in the course of that time, that's when he was moving on our hearts to sell our home and everything we had pretty much in Missouri, get completely out of debt. We had debt from previous time in life, trying to build a home and explore new income opportunities at the same time that didn't pan out. And so we got into debt and then just like carried that for the next many years. So get completely out of debt. Also get out of Babylon, which is a whole new thing, big thing to open up.
Yeah.
And then also on top of that, or in addition, it was move out of the U.S. for a while, starting in Portugal, and spend some time living nomadically and leaning into a thing, leaning into kind of modeling nomadic homesteading. And so it was and sell our seed company too, to the friend and neighbor in Idaho that's been running it for us. And so it was a lot. And it was a big change, and it was really scary, and it was a thing we really, really, really had to pray about. And it was that, you know, we felt the weight of, okay, we've got children to take care of. It's not just my wife and I. Yay, we're going off living nomadically and doing whatever we want in a small space. But we felt so strongly God telling us to do it that we couldn't not do it. And things were coming to a head, like debt-wise, collectors were calling, and it was a time like we needed to deal with this debt, and we didn't have a way to do it. Like, we hadn't made serious income for 6 months. We were trying all kinds of things, but they weren't panning out. And so the sale of our home enabled us to just walk, you know, pay off that stuff and walk away from it. So it has been really interesting, but part of what helped us make the decision and kind of help how Yah helped me process through that was the fact that we needed more income, but it was sort of another decision point where I could make the decision of going off and focusing on just me working really, really hard to try to make money and that be my sole focus. Or a huge focus, because we were living in a very rural area where it was hard to make serious money.
Right.
Because it was a low-income area. That's specifically why we lived there. It was cheap.
I think overhead. That would also be the go-to, as most guys would just be like, I'll just work, right. It'll be fine.
Right. Or I'll, and I know I have friends that, like, spend a week away from, you know, working a high-paying job and then come back for the family on the weekends or whatever. And so that was an option. But I didn't feel like this was the season to do that kind of thing. This, like, we already have a 10-year-old, almost 11-year-old. daughter. We only have, what, 7-8 years left with her?
That's right.
Like, it's already more than half gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And so just realizing, dude, I've got to be around.
Right.
I can't just be gone for the next 5 years trying to catch up and pay bills and stuff and be responsible in that way, but let her down in the sense of being her father and really pouring into her before it's too late. And so a big thing that kind of helped inform our decision was the whole thing of, well, I could focus on my ability to perform tasks and trade them for money. Or we could go have a grand adventure as a family and we could work together as a family of, okay, how could we turn this thing that we're doing, if y'all wants us to live nomadically, how could we turn that into potential income? And we're still working on that part, mm-hmm. little pieces of it. And there's a lot of avenues. Primarily thus far, it has been just figuring out the logistics of actually living that way and living off of the sale of our home in Missouri. But like, we're pretty much done with that. And so now we're at the really rubber meets the road point of figuring out, okay, we still have some runway because the seed company is still providing income. But that's phasing out because we're in the process of selling that company.
Right.
And so we're very much like, It's that raw period of like, okay, we're figuring this out. We're walking, you know, God has told us to do this. So we're walking it out and figuring out how to do it. So I basically realized I could invest only in me and me either like learning new skills so I could do new tasks to bring money in, or I could go off and spend more time doing things that would bring money in, or we could go as a family and do a thing that could potentially, you know, be a thing that we would do together.
Right.
And it kind of struck me because I go through times of doubt and times of like worry and freaking out a little bit of, wow, we're doing something we've never done before. We're in a place we've never been before and we're living in a really small space and we don't have the security of owning property. So if stuff goes to the tank, then at least we can just kind of sit still and eat off of our stores mm-hmm. and burn wood in our wood stove to keep warm and we're fine. Like we're in a mobile situation where, okay, we own the vehicles that we're living in, but we don't own a place where we can park them.
Right.
So we're just trusting y'all for that, especially in these times that we're living in right now that are uncertain. I forget, I was driving a certain direction with that thought. I forget where it was going.
No, it's fine. I was going to interject anyway, yeah. So it's probably a good timing. I was going to ask with regards to, despite being faced with really what it seems on the, on paper, mm-hmm. difficult, adverse circumstances and environments and situations mm-hmm. in order to, be a family, essentially. Yeah. It sounds like it's feeding into this quality time that we speak about. You know, it can sound a bit vague,
yeah.
From what I'm gathering, it's despite the adversity, it's actually facilitating this. Very uncomfortable status of being, but is actually facilitating this right. quality time with your family, which will. Right. Indelibly be printed in their life,
yes.
and the course that they go.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, I can only think, and I don't mean like as some kind of like, well, as any a word of encouragement, but no, genuinely, yeah. I can only think of like the lessons and the values that your children are seeing and being part of. Aside from even the fruit of what you're doing, which I don't know the full details of. I think even the boldness and seeing the courage and the faithfulness of their folks being like, no, this we're being obedient to God and this is the adventure mm-hmm. that's like the coolest thing. And I can't even imagine the prepping and the facilitating of growth and development for your children for their future years to be like, no, we got God, like we got the Spirit. Yeah. We can do all things. We literally can do all things in Christ.
We're seeing that in action. Yeah. It can be deeply uncomfortable. It can lead us into situations and scenarios which we don't understand. However, we have joy, we have love, we have all of the fruits of the Spirit. So, you know, from that perspective, bro, I can only commend. And again, I'm sure you're still very early days in terms of what, you know, where y'all's taking you with this. But I think that's incredible, bro. And I'm sure it will be invaluable for their futures. No doubt. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Praise y'all for his, how he can work things out. Because like you said, it's the fact that we're serving him and that we know him is the only reason we can do this. Like, if it was depending on our ability to pull things together, it wouldn't work. It is like Yah literally just worked out something for us last night where we desperately needed propane. We had propane bottles that don't work here because they're a continental European style, apparently.
EU regulated.
That is not up here. And we were faced with, like, we can only carry so much stuff with us, and because it's all on wheels. And so not to get into the weeds on that, God provided. Like, he just last night, he was like, here's a person that'll sell you an old, you know, one of his bottles that is in the UK system. Way discounted from what I would have to pay new. And he told me exactly where to go. And I had, like, I got there with like 7 minutes to spare before they closed. And I was trying to get it done before Shabbat so we could, like, have propane to stay warm with.
Wow.
And so it was just like God working out details and just like opening doors. Like, boom, 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 boom. This thing you've been worrying about for weeks, here. Now it's fixed. Okay. Thank you, Father. but yeah, you're right. And that's that whole thing of life being an adventure. So many of us have been conditioned in our Western comfort.
Right.
And our modern lifestyles, we've been so conditioned to do the comfortable, to do the easy, to do the stuff that doesn't require me to break a sweat or worry or get uncomfortable. Mm. We're so adverse to doing, you know, the very stuff that can mark us and our children and groom us for what Yah has for us, you know, ahead for us.
Right. And how crucial do you think that is in the formative years? Because like we said, we're emphasizing, you know, what it is in the early stages of their lives and how we can impart that. So how critical do you see that?
I think huge, just because it's that whole thing of conditioning, and what you're used to becomes your norm. And if you know, I experienced the norm of being in a pretty well-off family financially. I wasn't aware of it, but come to, you know, in later years, I realized, like, wow, we, like, really didn't need to worry about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there were ways in which I had to learn skills later on that would have been helpful to know earlier. That you only learn when you're struggling.
Right. The fun way.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think it's huge. Just the fact of our children, because you can go so many directions with this, but even just the direction of getting to see the Holy Spirit in action. We grew up in churches that kind of downplayed the work of the Holy Spirit and his active present day working,
right?
And power, and
the day to day,
our upbringing lacked that very much. We heard it in stories, we heard it in testimonies and biographies, but we didn't see it in everyday life. But we've now seen it many times. Like, Yah healed my wife from celiac disease.
Right.
She used to have to eat gluten free. She doesn't have to now. Same with certain of our children. We're going that direction. That's gone now. But we saw that because we gave him opportunity to display that part of himself, and we acknowledged, we opened ourselves up to the reality that, okay, maybe we haven't experienced all that God has to show us. So we need to be open to him showing us more of himself, and not just putting him in a box and saying, you have to stay in this shape that we've built for you. Same goes for our kids. If they only live, you know, a comfortable, easy life, and a life that doesn't involve some scary situations, then they won't know how to handle scary situations when they come up in their own lives. So many children are protected so much and insulated so much from real life that they just don't know
how to handle it. To the point of detriment, yeah.
Yeah. So it's been good exposing our kids to being uncomfortable because we don't speak a language that we're living amidst, or we don't exactly know where we're headed, you know, next week or whatever. It's been good for our kids to be part of that. It's hard, it's challenging, and we know that it's not fully, you know, it's not a fully rounded picture for a child to grow up in. Like, we need friends. It's hard to have friends when you're constantly mobile. And so we know that there's pieces that that's a big part where we know that Yah's will is not for us to be like this the rest of our lives.
Of course.
We know it's just a season. But I think that season, like you were saying, that season is gonna be a season that our kids will always remember, and they'll have lessons from that will carry into the rest of their lives.
I love that. And, you know, irrespective of financial position, geographical location, I think there's so many lessons that you're touching on there that are transferable for anybody in a family situation. Mm-hmm. And walking out faithfully. I feel like within the realms of not falling into hypocrisy, because we know that we've got the families downstairs mm-hmm, waiting for mm-hmm. us, because I feel like we could carry on for a long time.
Yeah.
Have you got any encouragements or maybe even advice for, I know you've kind of touched on it already, but like, what would be, from your experience, like words of advice or wisdom with regards to stepping out faithfully, raising your children? Mm. You've said there about the you talked about the advantages of being in discomfort and adversity. Mm-hmm. And I think this is no shade to any parents or anyone,
yeah,
because your inclination is to protect, right? And
yeah,
to insulate.
That's
and
part
to
of parenting is protecting and that's them. Yeah,
there must totally. Be a balance, because you don't want to yeah. just like, right, there's the precipice, jump out and you'll right. be fine. Here's a right. parachute. Like, there has to be a degree of balance, right? But yeah, how would you surmise like that element of protection, but opening yeah. Them up to the world and yeah, any encouragement for guys who are either thinking about, you know, the possibility of the realities of raising children, being in marriage, and actually doing that in a, you know, what can be seen as an adverse circumstance?
Good question. Obviously, it depends on where you are in life. And because some people will be coming at this question from like half-raised children already. And so sometimes, you know, it's different for them than from, you know, some folks downstairs that have a newborn.
Right.
Like, they have 18, 19, 20 years ahead where they can spend with that child, and they can do it very intentionally from the get-go.
Okay, I'll rephrase the question maybe a little bit. What do you think would put you in a good position to get the most out of these early, particularly the earlier years with your children?
I think one big thing is just being real with your kids, and not, because kids can smell hypocrisy from a mile away. We know when our parents were faking it in front of our friends so that our family would look normal or it would look healthy or whatever, and the difference, so you true, know I'm not right. pointing so fingers true. At no, anybody no, no. I'm saying not saying it happened, but they
right.
our kids know when we're faking they it so don't fake it. You know, try as much as you can. It's hard, but try as much as you can to be the same person you are in public as you are privately.
Wow.
Your own comfort of your own home, so that wherever you are in this journey, at least they will be seeing that whatever you believe and you're saying you believe, you are acting it out both in secret and in public.
Wow.
That's huge. Be willing to be very willing to admit when you're wrong in front of your kids. It's hard. And this kind of ties into that whole hypocrisy thing, because we don't want to, we want our kids to revere us. We want them to look up to us. We want, you know, us to be a stellar example in their minds of righteousness and right living and awesomeness. But we need that humility and that realness to them of, if we make a mistake, we need to own up to it. Because how are they going to have the model? How are they going to know that it's not only appropriate, but it's okay to admit that, shoot, I made a mistake and I was a jerk to everybody. I'm really sorry. Will you forgive me?
Wow. Which I think is, again, a massive point in our dependence on Christ.
Yeah.
It to acknowledge either our fallen nature, our weaknesses, even our sins, the mechanisms of forgiveness, them seeing that in operation, and ultimately our dependence on Christ. Like you said, you know, we're all trying to live righteously, but we can fall pretty far short quite often.
Yeah.
So I think that's I think you make an excellent point there about what it is to actually highlight the gospel, like, to our children in action in real time.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say another thing would be focus on your marriage and your relationship with your spouse, specifically in terms of communication. Even before my wife and I were married, I had us go through a course, kind of a premarital counseling course. Mm-hmm. It was called Defining the Relationship by Danny Silk. We have differing views on, like, the other things that they have done and the church they're affiliated with. But that course was very, very, very helpful. And it helped us learn to communicate effectively with each other, realizing that the goal of any communication, but especially the goal of communication spouse to spouse, your goal should be understanding them and what they're saying, not agreeing with them. So many times Sarah and I get into an argument because we don't agree with the thing that the other person is saying. And so they keep re-saying it and re-saying it and re-saying it. Or we keep re-saying it because they won't agree with us. But we finally realized that mainly we need to understand each other's point of view. And if that differs, it's okay.
Right.
We're still married. We're still committed to this thing for life. And so if there's a difference, we need to live with that, or we need to work with it gracefully over time. But we can seek understanding right now. That's something we could gain right now, just through more clear communication and especially the tool of me. Like, if you were sitting in the seat of my wife and you were trying to convey something to me, the way she's going to feel understood is if I say, okay, so I think what you're saying is, and then I just feedback what I think, you know, the understanding of what I think she's saying. If that's correct, then she feels heard. She feels understood. She's like, yes, yes, okay, you understand me. Now we can move on. Or nobody can go on with this understanding. But if I'm not correct in feeding back what I just heard, what I thought I heard, then it gives her an opportunity to correct it and restate it so I can understand it. So that has been just that foundation of your marriage being strong and your relationship with your spouse being strong, so that you are going, the two of you are going at life together rather than going at each other in the context of life, is huge for our children to see an example of, because it's a big part of life, dealing with conflict and dealing with communication. Just modeling that for your kids, but also having that healthy home atmosphere for them to be around.
I love that. There you have it, folks. Communication is key in all our relationships, particularly with our loved ones. Tom, I just want to go on record by saying the time that we've spent together has been an absolute pleasure. Mm-hmm. I think the way in which you guys have brought the fruit of the Spirit in the way you hold yourselves, the way in which you've embraced your surroundings is not only a credit to yourselves, but your children are a credit to you. That they bless us. They're so sweet, so well behaved, and I'm sure they have their moments like we all do, but for the most part, you guys have literally blessed us immensely just by
being who you are and being the family that you are. So I just want to thank you for your encouragement and your inspiration in just doing what you're doing and being who you are is more than sufficient. So, you know, anyone that's watching this, guys, if you're led to pray and to show your support in the spirit to these guys, it would be always most welcome. Tom, before we depart, any final words from yourself at all?
First of all, thanks. Like, thank you. You and Allman House for welcoming us with such open arms. It was so amazing. Just, we basically had one call with Joe and Becca saying, hi, here's who we are. Can we come to celebrate Sukkot with you guys? and then like since then, going through Sukkot and then the fellowships that we've been able to be a part of since then, it has been so amazingly helpful for our family, just being welcomed in so warmly. So thank you. Thank everybody in Allman House. Let's see. Not surprisingly, I would say just be obedient. Keep doing what God tells you to do. If God is putting something on your heart, don't be afraid to lean into it with all you have. And in faith, knowing that He'll provide and He'll help you through it. And model that openly in front of your kids. Yeah.
Perfect. You heard it from Tom. Saddle up, guys. Real blessing, Tom. I really appreciate you coming to share your experience and your heart with us today. Again, if this is something that you've been inspired by, get involved with the comments and all the rest of it. Like, share, subscribe. Will and Tom, this isn't the last conversation we'll have on record, because I think it's always a pleasure to share with you. Yeah. And it's always easy to do so. So appreciate that, bro. So lots of love to you and your family as you on go with your adventures.
Thank you.
And that's been the Upper Room. From our house to yours, shalom. God bless. We love you loads. We'll see you on the next one, Yah willing.